What's up, everyone? Today we have the very first repeat guest on the show. But before we get to that, please remember to hit the like, listen, download, subscribe, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you listen. This will help to ensure we continue to bring you the quality shows you have come to expect. When today's guest was first on the show, he had just received his black belt. In the years since, a lot has changed for Armand Fati. He has become a licensed chiropractor, and just this month has opened his own jiu-jitsu academy. Listen as Armand discusses the benefits of chiropractic medicine for the regular person and jiu-jitsu practitioner alike, dispels some of the myths about that profession, and what it takes to open an academy, from getting students in the door, teaching classes, and how to treat new students, and so much more. Here is The Roll Radio with BJJ Black Belt under Idris Ridzovic and owner of the brand new Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Laguna Hills, Dr. Armand Fati.
Welcome to Raw Radio.
And we are live. Gary, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Today's going to be fun. It's the first time we've ever had a repeat guest, so we're comfortable with each other. We're already making fun of each other, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun. But before we get to that, drop your questions at therollradio.com. And we are going to read one of those questions on the air. But also, every time we read one of those go into a pool to win a free Fuji gi. Your chances are so much higher than they used to be. So go to therollradio.com, drop a question for the guest. If we read yours on the air, you go into a pool to win a free gi. And then the first episode of every month, we randomly draw that name.
I'm starting to think they don't want the gis.
Why?
I don't know.
You're always so negative.
More people.
You're just so negative. People. You're negative.
No, take advantage of it. Listen, it's we send them out every single month. So Fuji does, actually. So props to the guys at Fuji for working with us and really creating this great opportunity for you guys. Shall we get to this?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So the first time we spoke was a while back.
Do you need me to do this today?
No, listen. It was almost a year ago.
Yes.
Armand, do you remember that?
Yes, sir. This was like right after I got my black belt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I returned to California. We met up online and we talked very much about how the Gracie and the 10th Planet world, sort of the comparison and the contrast between those two. And certainly, I mean, I've got way more to talk about on that topic, but I understand today's a little bit of a different focus. And since then, since I had got my black belt, 4 months later, I graduated chiropractic school and became a licensed chiropractor in the state of California. So there's certainly a lot to talk about on that topic. And I believe that's the reason why I was being recruited as the first second time guest ever in Roll Radio history.
That is right. So if you want to hear the other story, go to episode 15. So this is very, very beginning of when we were actually, we probably sucked at this really bad. Not that we are experts but
we sucked really, really bad. Now really, we just really suck bad. Really bad.
But listen,
you guys were great.
But listen, you're right. Since then, things have changed. Things have changed on your side, right? One, you have graduated and you have your own practice, your license to practice. And we're going to spend a lot of that conversation really focusing on how can chiropractic adjustments help with jiu-jitsu, right? Because you're kind of an expert now in two different areas. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I think... Right. Like I like to think, that I know more than most, but I don't know it all. Right. And that's kind of the black belt mentality, right? Like you can't think like you know it all, right? As blue belts, we knew it all.
Gary? Right?
So I think I'm more like
I don't know shit.
Right. Like I knew it all as a blue belt. I knew everything. And then I became a black belt. I'm like, okay, like there's a lot of stuff that's a lot of gaps, a lot of holes, a lot of things. And then there's a beauty in the journey takes you for life. So. I mean, I am licensed as a chiropractor. Yeah, let's put it that way. And I feel I have a good amount of knowledge on the topic of, muscular health, joint health, nerve health, those sort of things. And recovery with jiu-jitsu. A lot of the patients I see are jiu-jitsu jiu-jitsu practitioners, it had probably at this point, it's probably 90% of who I see, people who do jiu-jitsu. And, the goal is to sort of branch out from that and, do more than just jiu-jitsu people. But for sure, yeah, I mean.
One of the interesting things, I think, is that actually literally 10 minutes ago, I was speaking with one of our students, and he showed me a picture from Hanner Gracie seminar, and you are in that picture.
Yeah, so that was the one back in Lincoln Square.
Yeah, was it 2016, I think, or 2015?
Yeah, he came twice. He came once in 2013-ish, and then another, or 2013-14, and then I think 2 to 3 years later, he came and did another one. I went to both, imaginatively so.
Yeah.
I still remember everything he taught at both seminars. Still remember. The first one was a triangle mastery one. The second was a guillotine mastery. But I took advantage of the fact that the Redziviks always are bringing, the best talent in the world and, to have it at our academy, right? I mean, that's a blessing. Let's take advantage of it.
Well, and for those who don't know, you just open an academy, right? Talk about that a little bit. So how that kind of creates this big bubble, big circle closing all together, right?
Yeah. So when I was a white belt, I was really intrigued by the Gracie University and their whole program. I remember I just competed in IBJJF Open and I was like 2-stripe white belt, 3-stripe white belt and got my butt kicked first round. I mean, just, I'm saying, got taken down, guard passed, Americana, like my arm just cranked. And I remember just being so discouraged from that. Like, man, I didn't like losing. I mean, I'm like, I'm not going to quit, but man. And I just remember watching, just a few videos from the brothers, man. And they just had a real good perspective about, doing this for life and, having fun. And they're really engaging with, how they talk. And I saw, wow, I can open a school as a blue belt. That was sort of the thing that I saw from them, because, you can get certified as a blue belt and then, eventually open your own school. And they have levels to it based on the rank. You could be level 1 through 4 of certification. But that aside, I basically made up my mind as a white belt that, this is what I want to do one day. I want to have a school. I'm teaching Gracie combatives. I'm teaching the master cycle advanced stuff. And I was going to wait until black belt. I knew, and even Henry has told me, it's like, you can open a school as a blue belt if, and be successful. And I remember being a brown belt and saying, I want to wait until I'm a black belt. He's like, that has nothing to do with like, the success of your school necessarily. But I think it's a better look personally. So yes, I just opened Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Laguna Hills. I'm here right now. Let me tilt the camera a little bit. So I'll show you guys the logo right here, as well as green mats.
The green mats.
The world famous green mats.
The world famous. And so, it certainly brought a lot of stuff full circle, because you talk about something I aimed to do 8-9 years ago. And that goal has still been in my mind, is still what I wanted to do. And even chiropractic, man, I'll talk a lot about chiropractic, but the reason I even changed career paths and went into chiropractic was because of jiu-jitsu. It was because I knew that this tied in well with the jiu-jitsu lifestyle, tied in well with natural health. You're not pumping people full of drugs. You're not giving them pharmaceuticals. It's manual therapy. What I'm saying? And for me, that was a very attractive notion to, get into this whole world. So yes, I opened a Gracie Laguna Hills, to answer your question. And it's kind of crazy, man. Just learning SEO stuff. I mean, I'm going to talk to someone after this podcast about Google ads. Should I do Google ads or Instagram ads or Facebook stuff? The marketing aspect of it. And then, the back end stuff, all the admin stuff, it was a whole learning curve this last week. Of just like, okay, signing up. Okay, I got like 6 people signed up so far and they're on the auto billing. So it's like, okay. That was a whole just process of like learning how to do that. Forget about it. On the mat, it's the only thing that keeps me going. It's like, I love this work. When I'm actually teaching is when I'm my happiest, because then it's like, this is what I'm doing it for.
Yeah. And you know what? Hold on. Do you mind tilting your camera a little bit up? Because like as much as I love your nose, other people on YouTube might not. But listen, this is so true. I had this conversation recently with somebody, and there's this big misconception about how much work instructors do. And really, I was kind of contemplating or kind of thinking about this. And I think my me teaching on a mat, it's probably roughly about somewhere about 40% of the work that I do, which is less than everything else that I have to do to make the academy operational, right? Do you find yourself in the same position, like in the very beginning of this new journey?
Probably at the beginning. I mean, I'd say it's at this point, it's, you know, less than 40% is like on the mat stuff. Maybe, well, I think actually on a time-wise thing, yeah, I mean, I'm teaching 5-6 hours a day now. So it's like time-wise, yeah, it, maybe it just seems like so much more. Yeah. The other part, like, you know, I just came back from Bed Bath & Beyond and got a couple chairs, you know, for the thing. I mean, just dressing this place up. I mean, the Alio poster hasn't even come in. And then that's like a whole thing. You got to have Alio up and framed, you know. That sort of stuff. I'm just the mats, man. And getting the mats was a whole journey. I mean, that was like a 2-month process because we had to measure and then remeasure and then remeasure. And they came back to us. They said, listen, you're about 3 inches off. I'm like, oh my God. Because we have a very obscure sort of shape to our mats.
Yeah.
You know, and you see behind me this pole right here.
Yeah.
Right here. Yeah. This screwed everything up, man.
When post in the middle of the room always does.
Yeah. You didn't want to just like take a sledgehammer and take it out?
No, it's a structural support one.
Who cares?
There's no way we can do it.
Just take it out, man.
I know. I mean, that's what I was saying. The contractor was like, no. Absolutely can't. And I'm like, dang. Right. But then essentially, like, we had to measure from each corner of that post to every corner of the mat. And then, you know, straight lines and everything. I didn't even know all this stuff. I mean, we had to have the guy come in and, like, off his off time and, like, pay him extra just to measure it. He's like, this isn't part of my job. It's like, you know, I just make the mats. But it's like, you want me to come measure it? I'll do it right. I'm like, yeah, man, we've measured like 3-4 times and we're still not getting it right. Like, what are we doing? So, I mean, that took a while. Once the mats were down, my friend, once the mats were down, I was like, okay, I'm just going to announce a soft launch. We're going to start getting people in here and figure it out as we go, you know, because start paying rent next month. So I got to like just get it going.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't see that part. You know, they really... Unfortunately, I sometimes feel that way, that you know, students feel that we come in, we train, we roll, we chill, get some acai, and then, you know, we disappear, and there's really nothing behind it. But it's often so much more to running the operational stuff. It's ridiculous. To make it successful, let's just clear that up.
Yeah, because I want to have a successful school. I don't want to be like, you know, hemorrhaging money every single month and then this thing, you know, never takes off. I mean, it takes, I mean, I think like Hender talks about kind of a 3-pronged process, and you know, everything can be categorized under these 3 sort of umbrellas, right? You have the front office, you have the on the mat performance, and then you have the back office, right? So front office, and I'm just simplifying it here, but the front office is getting people through the door.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing, you know, SEO, you know, Instagram, whatever, Facebook, whatever you're doing to get someone to walk in and do that trial class. So you got to have the place operational at that point. I mean, you have to have the signup forms, you know, straight away. You have to have the signup process, the billing management software, student management software, that learning how to do that was a whole onboarding process. You know, all that stuff. I mean, it's a headache until, you know, you kind of figure it out. Then you're like, okay, the more I can systemize it and automate it, the better. But that's a whole process, right? That's one. Number two is on the mat performance. This is sort of bringing it every single day, the product. You know, how are you at teaching? How are you actually connecting with the students on the mat? And that's where I felt, you know, probably my biggest strength coming in was like, you know, I'm doing this for the right reasons. This is where I want to be. I don't want to be anywhere else but the mats. So far my classes, although small, have been fun, have been spirited, and people are excited. The people who come to class enjoy class. I'm not terribly concerned about that, but it does take continuous study, and especially for Gracing Combatives, where you have to teach it pretty much to a T. You know, I'm watching the videos before I teach each class. I mean, I'm teaching 3 combatives classes today. On the way here for 7 a.m. class, I was watching the lesson that I'm going to be teaching, and then, you know, I came back and I was, you know, not forgetting the details. I'm not forgetting, you know, these little subtle things. This is super fresh in my mind. You know, so the preparation, I think people don't see that the preparation for the classes, you know, what are you going to teach? You know, and then if you're doing it for the right reasons and you connect with people, I think that's going to show, and vice versa. And then the back office stuff, all the admin, right? All the, you know, janitorial work. I don't know if that that's a whole thing. But I mean, again, just keeping people signed up, you know, the you know, there's fees and there's, you know, managing people's accounts. And right now, again, I got 6 signups in like 3 days, 4 days. So it's baby steps, but it's easy to manage 6 people. But then when you get to 100 people, can I manage all those accounts?
Yep.
200 people, 300 people. Like, at what point is it like, okay, I'm going to need help to, you know, start to do this gear. I mean, right now I'm doing all the admin. I'm doing, you know, most of the teaching. And then, you know, I got to get a lot more on the front office. Like, I got to put people through these doors now. Now I'm like talking about, okay, marketing things, marketing. So yeah, I mean, it's challenging. I mean, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I see what the life that it could create. And that's the ideal life, to, you know, do jiu-jitsu professionally and have a school. I mean, come on, man, it's the best life you could have.
Best thing ever, right?
It's the best thing ever, true. But you know, it takes work to get there, man. It takes work to be your own man, to be your own boss. And then chiropractic, I got chiropractic at the gym as well. So hopefully like early on that's, you know, I've adjusted a couple of people so far. So that can be a added revenue source, sort of help in the beginning. And, you know,
so how are you aiming this in the future? So is Jiu-Jitsu Academy going to be the primary focus for you, or is the chiropractic services going to be playing significant role? How are you slicing this?
Well, today and long-term is going to be a little different. Long-term, I'd sort of like to, you know, kind of have the freedom to, you know, see some patients each day, maybe teach a few hours a day. I mean, right now I'm going to be teaching 6 hours a day and taking, you know, whatever patients I can, but I haven't even started taking insurance as a chiropractor. I haven't even started, everything's been sort of cash, Venmo, PayPal type thing. And once I kind of get networked into these things, and that can start to sort of drive the, you know, patient flow. And yeah, the key is just to get more and more organized, because I have adequate space to sort of run a bit of a chiro operation. You know, I got a couple good rooms, good sized rooms. I can have 2 chiro tables and like some e-stim stuff, massage table, you know what I'm saying? Like a couple stretch machines and, you know, enough to run a legitimate practice pretty much. But then, right, it's like, how am I going to balance it? How much am I going to teach? I would rather be teaching than, you know, seeing a bunch of patients. But, you know, that depends. I mean, if it's more cost effective, I could hire someone to teach and then, you know, see some patients. And again, I like seeing patients. It's just, jiu-jitsu is like a passion. It's a love. So, you know, I would want to cap myself at a certain amount of patients a day, but I don't have that luxury right now. But yeah, I mean, the goal is to sort of balance that out towards what I'm feeling.
Yeah, know? One step at a time. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the chiropractic adjustments, right? Because that's the main reason why we asked you to be here. You know, it is sometimes even a controversial topic. You know, is chiropractic adjustment really necessary? Some don't even find it useful, and some swear by it. So, like, I'm all about it. Like, I have my monthly adjustments set. Like, I'm all about it. But there are some that don't. And share your vision on this. How do you see this from the other perspective? Is this helpful?
It's incredibly helpful. I mean, for me, it was the reason I got into it was because I was training so much. I was a blue belt, and I was at downtown Loop location, training with Idris and Adam there. And I remember getting cross-faced and destroyed in a roll, and my neck was, I couldn't turn one way. I couldn't turn to the left. I couldn't turn to the right. And, you know, rested a bit, went, got a massage, you know, 3 days, 4 days. I'm like, no improvement. I'm like, man, just, this is rough. And then I'm like, I'm going to watch class and participating. And then I tried to train, like, God, it's so much pain. Happened to be visiting my sister in San Francisco like a week later. And Adam got me onto Dr. Pete Goldman. I'm sure you've heard his name a little bit. He's a black belt himself. He's a pretty old school chiropractor. The way he does it, he doesn't do a lot of the new bells and whistles that a lot of chiropractors do, but man, he's an effective adjuster. One adjustment, man, just like, I walked out of there, like all the nerve pain was gone. I was breathing better, and I was scheduled for like another appointment in 3 days. And then, you know, a couple of days later, I'm just like, you know what? I feel great. Like, I don't even need another appointment. I mean, like, what's the marginal difference between the first and the second appointment? So, to answer your question, how necessary is a dental cleaning, right? Is it absolutely necessary? You have to get your teeth cleaned every 6 months. Otherwise, you know, the world is going to collapse on you. Or, you know, if you, you know, exercise good oral hygiene, you could probably get away with not doing it for a year or 2 years. You know, who knows? Right. So, I mean, I use the same sort of analogy, like how well are you taking care of yourself? I mean, you want your teeth pristine and clean. I mean, you're going to go get a cleaning every, you know, occasionally. You want your spinal health to be ideal. I mean, I'm not going to tell anyone they need something, but you know, one thing I've been really turned off from the chiropractic profession, and, you know, some concierge medicine as it goes in general, it's really the salesy aspect of it. Like, I've known chiropractors that want to sell you 20 appointments, 20, 30 appointments. I mean, man, that if you're a good chiropractor, and, you know, I'm sure some chiropractors are going to disagree with me what I'm going to say. If you're a good chiropractor, the work that I need to do, if you're in bad shape, like usually 3 to 5 visits, you should feel like, if I'm the guy for you, if I'm the guy, you should feel like close to 90%.
What do you mean by if you're the guy?
Yeah. If I'm the guy, if I'm the person that like you need to see.
What does that mean?
Are you talking like personality wise, you guys click your, or are you talking about what you know and how you do it?
No, I'm saying if really what we're dealing with is a, you know, neurological deficit or joint restrictions, you know, something that like it's right up the chiropractor's wheelhouse. You know, I mean, a good chiropractor might even, you know, 1 or 2 visits have you way close. I remember seeing a guy in a chiropractic school. He was a mechanic, and he threw his like upper back out working on his car one day. And he's like, oh, I just have this pinching pain. It's like a 9 out of 10 pain. It's killing me, man. Blah, blah, blah. And then I did one like front to back adjustment. I detected, I'm like, yeah, that thing is like brick right there. Okay, let's work on that. And then I just did one adjustment. Like the whole upper back went like, just cracked. And he just saw that ecstasy on his face. Like, whoa. He's like, man, I'm like 90% better, man. Like, oh man. And then he came back 1 week later. I did the same thing to him. He was like close to 100%. He's like, man, I feel amazing, man. Thank you so much. So that's what I mean by like, if I'm the guy that specific to what you're dealing with, you need to see a chiropractor. And again, you know, the insurance companies don't want me to say that. The, you know, chiropractors, you know, who do insurance. I mean, they do a lot of good work, man. I mean, it's sort of it's a sensitive topic because I wouldn't want to throw any guy under the bus, but I know a lot of chiropractors that all they do is they run insurance and they're trying to run the insurance as high up as they can to be as profitable as a practice as they can. And, you know, sometimes you get away from actually like dealing with the health of the patient. What do they need? Can I help you right now? You know, in 2 to 3 appointments, 1 appointment versus like, oh, okay, let's just get them on 20 appointments. Okay, good. We made the sale.
Do you think that this is more of a, in your mind, is this more of a reactive approach to the injury, or are you looking at this more of a maintenance on a regular basis? Because that's, I think, the big difference here between two different approaches, right? Some, and I mean, I've seen it before where some will say, listen, I want to see you every 2 weeks until this is fixed. And that's something what you talk about, right? And others will say, well, you know, let's tackle this. I think you're good. I don't need to see you for next, you know, few months or whatever.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about both. Certainly, if you're dealing with a chronic issue, I mean, it might take a few more visits. I mean, I haven't seen a patient 20 times to kind of account for that. Well, I take that back. I mean, when I was working in a personal injury office as a student, you know, we would see these repeat patients. And maybe after a month of treatment, even though they were set for 3 months of treatment, they would be pretty much healed. And they would just come in and they would just feel good. And they would, you know, get the adjustment and they'd say, hey, love, hey, how you doing? And they were in good spirits. That's sort of the chronic injury part. Yeah, people who deal with car accidents, I'm sorry for this, that little coffee. I know I did that on the last podcast, so, you know, we're bringing it back a little bit. Well, yeah, the injury sort of healing thing, it can definitely help that process. But the maintenance aspect, performance aspect, I think that's a better way to put it. Because maintenance just kind of indicates you just want to be kind of where you're at. So let's just keep you where you're at. So let's maintain. But I mean, just yesterday and the day before, I adjusted a couple people that competed at the 10th Planet Qualifier before they competed. And you could tell a difference in their performance. They came to me afterwards and they said, I felt better, you know, because of your adjustment, you know, in my competition. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you're going to go race a car, you know, are you going to get your car serviced after the race or before the race? You know, if you're a pro, probably both, but you know, before, you want to feel, you know, tuned up. You don't want to have restricted range of motion when you're trying to play guard, right? You'd like to sort of have all that stuff opened up and then start to, you know, play your game. Now, if you've never been adjusted before, certainly, you know, it's not uncommon for people to have a little bit of soreness, you know, a day or two after the first time. Sometimes people tense up when they're being adjusted, and, you know, really the physiological aspect of the adjustment is sending a very precise force through the joint. You don't want to send a force through the muscle. So that's why, you know, you always have a chiropractor relaxing, say, hey, relax. Don't help me out. Don't flex. Don't do any of these things. It's just because you want that person to be completely limp and limber, you know, just loosey goosey. So when we send that little direct thrust, we're sending it directly through the joint. And when people tense up and they're firing those muscles, and if someone, you know, an amateur chiropractor kind of fires it in there, and you know, it happens to the best of us, but I've been very good about just get people to relax. You can feel the tone of their muscle. You know, that's where people might have a bad experience with the chiropractor, because they adjusted when they weren't supposed to adjust. They didn't have that sensitivity to say, or to you know, send the thrust when it was, you know, the person was relaxing. What was your question again? I feel like maintenance. Yeah. Maintenance and recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially I was talking about what should be the approach. Let me rephrase. When do you come the most useful to a jiu-jitsu practitioner? As a proactive maintenance approach, or I got hurt, let me go see Armin because he's going to fix me?
Certainly the proactive approach, that's my opinion, right? I mean, you could talk to different chiropractors and, you know, they might disagree. I mean, I think some guys have said, oh, I like it after. I have found that when people come to get adjusted by me afterwards, or after like an acute injury, after something happens, there's usually a lag period of a couple weeks where those muscles are so tense that any attempt to adjust them might be counterintuitive, might be counterproductive. And again, the analogy too is like, you know, people dealing with whiplash injuries. I've seen a lot of personal injury cases. And if they come in maybe a week or so, or, you know, within a week, within 2 weeks of that car accident and get adjusted, then they're tight. Their muscles are fire, man. And those muscles are guarding their neck from, you know, falling out of structure. So, you know, even if I try to move their neck, it burns.
So what do you do then? You don't adjust them, or?
Generally stretch, traction, you know, whatever we can do to quiet those muscles down. You might do some e-stim on those muscles to sort of, you know, electrically get those muscles to relax a little bit.
Is that why a lot of chiropractors use like warm pads or hot pads and traction tables, and just to purely relax your muscles before the adjustments?
Yeah, those are useful for those purposes specifically. Yeah, and massage, actually, insurance will cover massage if it's used in conjunction with a chiropractic adjustment, but it won't cover just massage, right?
I won't even ask about that.
Therapeutic massage, man. Therapeutic massage.
So, all right, I'm gonna probably push a button here, or somebody's button that's listening. But we had a student here who was saying that basically a chiropractor doesn't treat the underlying issue, that they're just relieving symptoms, and that if you need to, or and if you want that underlying issue corrected, you need physical therapy. And how do you feel about that? Is he totally off his rocker? Is there something that maybe does bridge that?
Well, I think I wouldn't say off his rocker. I mean, I don't want to call anyone out and say, hey, they're straight up ignorant, but I disagree. You know, Dr. Pete Goldman, the reason that I got into chiropractic was because chiropractic can treat so much more than just a musculoskeletal issue. You know, that the technique I do is the zone technique that, you know, based off whatever brain center is sending a faulty signal to whatever organ system in the body, we can detect that. Sort of, you know, the neck is almost like its own circuit breaker. You can start to see what switches are turned off. And the spots that I adjust you on the back, it has nothing to do with, you know, the joint restriction, right? That's sort of the mechanical way of thinking, the mechanical school of thought. But we're looking at the glandular system, the eliminative system, nervous, digestive, muscular, circulatory system. Based on these, it makes a lot more sense to feel it. But you could essentially, yeah, you can very much treat the underlying cause of a disease. And, you know, Dr. Pete, he's had miracles happen with, you know, now these types of appointments, they take a lot longer. You know, if you want to treat someone's digestive issues, you have to, you know, adjust the digestive system, C4, T4, T8, and L4, the levels that send nerves to those systems specifically. The organs of digestion, they have their nerves coming out from specific levels. And if we give electrical stimulation to those levels, then it'll sort of reset the circuitry between the brain, which is the positive pole of this big electrical machine that we are as humans, this big organic electrical machine, and the organs, which is the negative pole of the machine. We are a big electrical machine. And, you know, to say that we don't treat the underlying cause of disease, I mean, I think a lot of chiropractors don't focus on the primary cause, certainly, okay, but it has the capability to, for sure.
So essentially what you're saying is that, let me translate this into my own interpretation. Hypothetically, my knee is hurting me. And if I go to see a chiropractor, they have the capability to adjusting a specific parts of my spine to reset the nervous system that is sending the signals for my knee to be injured?
Well, yeah, to optimize nerve flow to your knee. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're dealing with a knee issue, you know, I would be remiss to not, you know, look at the muscles of the knee, right? So it's like, you know, do you have a tight hamstring? Is that what's causing it? Is it a tight quad? Is it, you know, did you land on it wrong? I mean, the history is incredibly important. I mean, history could tell you 90% of basically the diagnosis right there. It's like, did you land on it a certain way? I mean, if you tore your ACL, there's nothing on the spine that's going to repair your ACL. You know what I'm saying? But, right. I mean, I'm going to press your back and something to your heel. No, but it can certainly make it a more efficient healing process. Absolutely. And I, you know, a spinal adjustment is part of any adjustment. Someone comes in with knee pain, I'm going to adjust your spine because I know this is going to help you. Ultimately, it's going to help with the way you move. It's going to help with the electrical conduction to the muscles that move your knee. And then, you know, I can do some soft tissue on the knee. I can adjust the knee. I can sort of try different ranges of motion to see, you know, can we detect the problem precisely? But, you know, there is a lot of value in adjusting the spine for any patient that comes in.
What's some of the most common situations that you're dealt with up to this point when it comes to jiu-jitsu practitioners specifically? Let's narrow this down to, you know, part of your clientele.
You know, something I see very common, people come in who get armbarred and, you know, they get a very tight elbow, their arm hurts, they can't straighten out their elbow completely. And then, you know, sure enough, yeah, okay, take a history, they got armbarred, great. Take a history, they got, you know, Camored, so that, you know, easy enough to understand on the jiu-jitsu level. Anatomically, you look at the structures that surround that region, that joint. I look at the humeral ulnar joint, the elbow joint, and man, 100% of the time that I've done this, it helps. I do kind of like an active release on the bicep tendon. You know, I'll pin the tendon and I'll stretch it out, get him back, pin the tendon, stretch it out. And then, you know, one appointment, people say, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I can straighten my arm out now. And that nagging pain is gone. And that, you know, that's not necessarily old school chiropractic. That's, you know, active release therapy. You know, that ART, if you've ever heard of that stuff.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't tap, we should just go and see you.
Yes.
Don't tap,
I will take care of you. Nice. If you tap, you know, I might be out of job, so.
wait a minute. What if you're the one tapping us?
Conflict of interest.
In your class, so. Yes. Now,
I try not to be too sick. Like, I never.
How are you going to handle the billing on that?
So yeah, billing has been very much just a cash basis so far.
No, you know, no, I mean, if you cause my injury on your mats, and then you take me in the back and give me an adjustment.
You signed the waiver, man.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been very, I'll tell you what, guys, like, I've been real careful with people on my mats when I roll with them. No, I got, so far I got, 6 people signed up and, you know, maybe another 10 people on their trials right now, their 10-day trials. 3 of them are blue belts.
They want to go.
So right? I got 3 blue belts signed up, you know, a couple locals and, you know, guy drives a little bit more of a distance, but you know, they have some training, they train at like a Gracie Baja something. And, you know, one guy was from Brazilian top team and they love this atmosphere. They love it. And they kind of go tough little, you know, they're working it, especially the top team guy. And I have to just be defensive. I cannot be reactive, whatever. I just kind of have to let them do what they do and, you know, protect my neck, protect my arm. Oh, there's my elbow escape. Boom. You know, just elbow escapes, recover, clinch, and then he creates opportunities for me. But yeah, I've definitely thought about that. Is like, how am I going to approach this duality of being a chiropractor versus someone who can actually dismember you? Right. So it's like, I try not to press the chiropractic in the teaching. Yeah. I always kind of keep that separate. Like as far as class time goes, class time goes, like the hour where there is 4 jujitsu, I'm not going to bring up the chiropractic. Once we shake hands and, you know, I just do fists, like pound it, everybody. And we leave the mats. I mean, if it comes up in conversation, sure, you know, we're off the mats. But I do try to keep those worlds a little bit separate from, as far as the jiu-jitsu goes. But
why?
Who knows? I'm still my first year. I'll learn from it.
I think things will change.
I think that will change. So how is, let's go back to the teaching part, right? So this is fairly new. Well, kind of sort of new, right? I mean, you've been teaching, you taught seminars, you taught private lessons, you've been involved in being a leader of groups and sharing your knowledge for many years now, right? But owning an academy and leading a class, that's a very different dynamic now. What has changed for you?
Well, the biggest thing that comes to mind off the top of my head is I have to know everybody's name. I mean, like that's something that it's like at this point, it's like unforgivable if I don't, if I care about running a business, if I care about, you know, having these people actually enjoy their time with me and just to pat someone on the shoulder. Good job, Bill. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever, you know, just kind of repeat it. I mean, these little subtle things people pick up on, you know, does the guy know my name? And I've been at schools, man, that, you know, nothing in Chicago, mind you, but like I've been at like just different schools and I'm like, these guys never learned my name, or like it took them a few months to learn my name. And I didn't care that much as long as the training was like high level. But you notice that from a business perspective, you notice that from a student retention perspective. So I guess that mentally thing. And I know that's like, I mean, there's a lot more to it. I'll talk about more things, but really, like, remember people's names, man. If you run a school, like, I just look at everybody's card, like, okay, who checked in? All right, let me make sure that I address them by their first name.
Henner is phenomenal in that. I've heard him talk about this a number of different times, and I know he uses different strategies. Was that part of your training for Gracie Affiliate?
Yeah, that was a specifically talked about thing, was remembering people's names. Like, that's in the training manual, just straight away. But, you know, it's something that I struggle with. So I always kind of kept in my mind that, you know, even if I don't know everybody's name at, you know, Gracie Academy, who I'm training with, there's like 80 people on the mat or whatever. Or even at Roll, when I was teaching with you guys, you know, I tried pretty good to like learn people's names. But I'm like, man, like, I know Tom and then like 6 other guys. And then, you know, Nate's a homie. I'm saying, but then like, there's a lot of people that I was like, okay, I should learn these people's names, this and that. But now that it's my own students, I'm like, I have to learn every single person's name.
What's your strategy?
I should have had that thinking with everybody I teach. You know what I'm saying? So
what's your strategy? How do you do it?
Just look at their cards before I go to class.
Yeah. Thomas has got a TV behind him with everybody's picture when they check in. So he's got a cheat sheet and it's a 55-inch television. You should try and get yourself one of those.
I might do something like that. Yeah. I mean, Also, I mean, I should do this more. Just tell people, hey, write your names on your gis. It's good, just so your training partners know each other. It's really for me, but it's like, just tell, because your training partners, you want to know each other's names. So again, it's about making people feel welcome, making people feel like they're part of something, and you know, they're not just another number. They're not just helping fill the academy and pay the bills. It's like, listen, we're here to serve you. And that's sort of the biggest thing. I think part of the name thing, I mean, it sticks on my mind as something that's so important, because one thing Henner has told me, he tells everyone, but he's like, listen, man, if people like you, nothing else matters. If people don't like you, nothing else matters. They will look for every single way to help you out and get your back and look the other way. If like they like how you treat them and they like the environment, they like the school, they're an ally. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But you know, if they don't like you and they're looking for, you know, then they're looking for reasons to discredit you. They're going to look to do that Yelp review. They're going to write you off. You know, they're not going to recommend people to you. So I think the customer, you know, he always says that, you know, you're not in the jiu-jitsu business, you're in the people business. And I think the biggest thing is just realizing this is my own ship now. Like, it's getting more and more real. Like, man, I mean, there's so much still to do. I mean, this place is almost bare other than the mats and like a couple knickknacks, a couple paintings or whatever. But yeah, the biggest transition, I guess, running my own school too. I mean, honestly, just looking at the bottom line, all the background stuff. Now I'm thinking about everything to make the school successful and like having the actual stake in it. You know, I cared so much about like making other people's schools successful before, like, let me recommend them. Then, you know, I'm not getting whatever. I'm not getting any reward out of it or anything with them. There's no risk, no reward. Now it's real, man. Now it's like, okay, I got to get to X amount of students. Otherwise, like,
So just now you're looking around the room. And there's a million thoughts going through your mind right now. What are you thinking?
I got to get a better mop. just you know, something gauge. a little bit more robust. You know, just I see some dusty things. More seating. You know, maybe some of these. See a little paint right there that could be touched up. You know, just about filling the classes this week. Like, check this out. I mean, I had a kids class on Thursday. We had one kid there and then the kids instructor, and then the kids instructor had her two nieces. So that was like three kids. And it pained me because that one kid that was here, his mom was really excited. It was a good, you know, honestly, the class went really well, but he just said something like midway through class. He was like, where's the other kids? And I'm just like, I mean, how do you tell a 5-6-year-old kid that, yeah, you know, it's just like our second day that we're open.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I remember when we switched up our schedule here and there was 2 or 3 weeks in a row where there was one kid in the early morning class and it was a different kid each time. And I think what we decided
that
to do.
That was during COVID. Yeah. I remember.
Well, but right no, after. it was not even, but this time I'm talking about was before. And I think, you know, we said to each other when the class started, we got to teach this like it's just a regular class. Like there's 30 kids in here and treat this kid like, he's special, obviously, because he's the only one here. And we did some stuff at the end of class that we don't usually do. But yeah, it was just like, it doesn't matter. And Jeff Curran talked about this too. It doesn't matter if it's one or 100, you got to give it your all and make them feel important. You know, people pleasing people again, right? The people business.
That's interesting. So let me ask you this, right? So you went from teaching seminars, even teaching, you know, at different academies, teaching classes and so on, and now you're at your own place, and there is a significant difference in the amount of students you're dealing with. Is that a good or bad thing?
Well, I mean, I think it's expected first of all, just being in the first week, but good or bad thing? I won't say it's a bad thing. Just a good thing. I mean, it's organic. I say it's a good thing in a sense. It's like, you know, everything that I build could be mine. I mean, like, you know, each sign up that I got real excited just because, like, you know, they enjoyed me. They enjoyed this program. I mean, like, you know, I'm not perfect. There's a lot of little imperfections here, but I felt like I delivered on the mat. I mean, I feel like everything, like I said, those three pillars, I feel the on the mat stuff is really pretty, you know, pretty much a strong point. Like, I know if I can get some people on the mat, it's going to, you know, there's going to be a high percentage of, you know, signups or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, good or a bad thing? It's a tricky question because.
Which one do you prefer?
Well, I'd like to have a bigger class. You know, I mean, I enjoy like being able to run 30, 40 students and, you know, start to, you know, kind of tell them, hey, do this, do this, do that. And I certainly feel very comfortable with bigger classes, and it can kind of get awkward with that one person sometimes, but it really hasn't felt terribly awkward. I mean, it's a bad thing in the sense that, you know, you'd rather have a big class. Let's be real. Like, I'd rather, you know, be teaching like, okay, today's class 22, these two things, three things. And then, you know, I got one person with me and it's basically a private lesson, but I'm not going to teach it how I would teach a normal private lesson. I'm going to teach it how we would teach a class, mm-hmm. right? A private lesson is more about what do you want to work on? Or like, let's, you know, we can kind of expand a bit. We can kind of mix it up a little bit or go on some tangents. It's all good. But, you know, if it's a class structure, it's like, I'm going to run the program head to toe. Right. But it's a good thing in the sense that it is an organic growth process. I mean, I feel, man, I'm growing every day, man. I mean, just running class and feeling more comfortable, encouraging guys. And, I mean, this is the process, man. This is building your own, you know, space, do or die. Like, that's the good thing about it, where it's like, you know, going from this process of, you know, coaching other people's students where it's like, really, I don't have much of a stake in how they're doing. That's great. I mean, like, they're going to go compete and, you know, represent someone else or whatever. I'm not even training people for competition. That's not my point. But, it, you know, there's a certain sense of pride when it's like your student that you took him from intro day. And like, now this guy, he's got a couple classes under his belt. It's like, hey, he's got a couple of the moves. You know, I have a guy in his late 50s training with me with the son who's 20 years old. They came in to 7 a.m. And then the guy in his late 50s, you know, like, you know, he was a smoker and, you know, he's like, he's getting in shape, you know. He gets winded off like two moves, like a trap and roll and then step over to mount. Like that's a lot, you know, but then, hey, you know, encourage him. Nice job. And then you see that smile, like, yeah, he's excited. Like he got them. And that's what it's all about, man. I mean, that's where it's like, then he's empowered, man. And then now it's like, I can take that and I can add to it every class. We can go to the next position. We can add to it and then get his confidence up and up. Or, you know, the blue belt from Brazilian top team that came through, like, he hadn't trained all COVID. You know what I'm saying? So he's, you know, gassed and winded after, you know, a couple minutes of rolling. But then, you know, then I can mid roll and, you know, I'm just chilling. I'm just flowing Copacabana style. Just, you know, grab a gi, lapel, boom, 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 take him left, right. I'm like, that's good, man. That's good. Like, keep moving. You know, just don't give up because of fatigue. You know, take some time, rest right here. You know, it's all good. And these little things, then you see that development. And having a stake in that development, I think, is really what makes it a good thing. That's what makes it where it's like, man, I'm building something here. Right. So,
You're talking about development of students. What do you think is one of the biggest obstacles for students to face as they're going through this journey? I think one of the advantages that you have that a lot of academies or a lot of instructors don't, there is a smaller group of students, then you have by far more narrow view to their development and their growth, right? When we are dealing with 100 or 300, 500 students, the instructors don't have a specific view on every single student because of the amount. Right now, as you're looking at this, you starting to grow, there is a students are coming in and they are starting to learn. What do you think is the biggest obstacle they are all facing? Was the common denominator all across, the biggest boulder that they have to overcome?
The new students, so you're asking more about these new students that are coming into my school, mm-hmm. or period?
Both, just in general. Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, again, I feel very lucky to sort of be under the Gracie University. They really prepare us very well for these sort of curveballs. No people coming in. I think, you know, the biggest obstacle for students, and, you know, the teacher can mitigate a lot of this. If you have a good teacher, you can really keep this in perspective, but it is basically coming. Yeah. The biggest obstacle is, coming to terms with your own limitations. right? Like coming to terms with what you can and can't do, not doing something right the first time, right? Failing, you know, just failing sucks. You know, no one wants to fail. You know, I'm not waking up each day hoping to fail, but I know that process is necessary for me to grow, for me to not make the same mistake. I mean, I've made so many mistakes in the last few months, you know, opening my own school, you know, just cost-effective measures, you know, did I have to spend money on this, that? I mean, I had a lawyer draw up some good waivers, and it turns out the Gracies have like their own waivers. I'm like, you know what? Ugh. Like, why'd I have, you know, someone else draw up waivers when it was redundant, essentially? Or I could ask another academy owner, hey, like, what kind of waivers you guys use? You know, little things like that. But yeah, I mean, that as far as the obstacles that students deal with, right? I mean, it very much, yeah, I mean, it's framing their own limitations. How do you frame it? And like I said, the teacher can really do a good job in terms of communicating to them, no, you're on your way, you're doing the right things. You know, and again, I mean, there's so many little measures that the, you know, Henron Huron, they take to encourage students in these things. One of them is 60-40 teaching. They call it 60-40 teaching, where you look at a move in a student and, you know, chances are they're going to do the move 40% wrong, 50% wrong the first time. No matter, I mean, you'll show the details to a T, you know, you'll frame it, you'll slice it up. I mean, everything's beautiful in the teaching of it, but they're going to do it like 60% right, man. Let's be real. You got to focus on that 60% when you tell the student, you know, how they're doing. Like, good job. Great. But like, you just point out what they did well, and then you move on. And then you maybe have them do it again, and you point it out, you know, move on. And Henner talks a lot about this deposits and withdrawals aspect. It's like, you know, think of like each student is like a bank account where, you know, they're a zero stripe white belt. Your bank account at zero, right? Every time you make a suggestion, or sorry, not suggestion, every time you make a compliment towards them, every time you remember their name, every time you have a good interaction with them, it's like you make a little deposit in that account. And then every time you make a very, you know, critique against them, anytime you kind of like write them off or something, whatever, I don't know, then you make like a withdrawal from that account. So you got to be careful about overcorrecting, right? Overcorrecting is as bad as like not paying attention to the student. So, you know, these students, you know, just make deposits for the first couple stripes, man, like just deposit, just really guide them. And then two, three stripes in, even I've seen like one stripe in sometimes, but two, three stripes in, you start to see that they're really hungry for those details, that it's okay to make that little tiny withdrawal. It's like, no, do it like this, do it like this. You can point it out a little bit more. You can be a little bit more specific with the critique. You know, they're ready to do that. They've been in it a few months, and you know, they're ready to develop. They're ready to get that technical aspect. But I think the biggest aspect is getting over that hurdle. Zero stripe white belt, one stripe white belt. And, you know, it's also just finding the right school, finding the right culture, finding a place that's not going to throw you into the fire day one, that you're sparring and, you know, you're in a full out spar and you don't even know how to defend yourself. You don't even know how to frame. You don't even know how to, you know, hip escape shrimp. And, you know, suddenly you're sparring. I mean, for me, it's like I was thrown in the fire from day one. And for me, I just got really angry at sucking and decided, you know, I don't want to suck at this, so I'm going to, you know, do what I have to do. But, you know, not every personality is like that. You know, people don't want to be uncomfortable, right? So it's finding that right environment that sort of breeds, you know, a gradual progression and safety and just remaining safe. That's the biggest thing for students, early students.
One of the things that Adam told me, Adam Radzivik told me a long time ago, or years ago, was that when you are in this instructor role, you want to look at the three things that your students could experience. And that's one, getting hurt, two, being embarrassed, and three, being wrong. Right? Hurt, embarrassed, and wrong. And more you avoid all three of them, at least one of them, more you protect your students from those, especially in the very early stages, more pleasant their experience is and more open-minded they are to continue learning that, the art of jiu-jitsu. And that's something what you talk about, right? I mean, it's
I think the reality is so interesting, right? Because every new student will be wrong. Like, no matter how, go ahead.
On that note, and this is a key point from what I've learned in this instructor program, just one phrase, man. Treat every question of your students like that question just saved your presentation. Mm-hmm. That is so key, man. And it completely validates their curiosity.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing to do from day one is to make it okay to be challenged. Make it okay to say, hey, I'm a black belt. I don't know it all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I want to help you guys like discover and say, hey, if a wave doesn't work like this, like that, don't believe me just because I'm a black belt. Don't just give me that bias. I want you to try it. Try it with this grip. Try it with that grip. And my findings, I find it to be a better grip, you know, stronger grip if I do it this way. But, you know, I want you to try both. Try both. So I think that a lot of schools are lacking in that curiosity breeding for students. And, you know, pointing out the students are wrong. You're a white belt. You don't know anything. No, man. You know more than you think you know. You're just discovering, you know.
Yeah,
and we're just discovering. And I'm just, you know, I've been at it a few years. And I can, I like what Carlos Sapao said once. He's one of these Half Gracie black belts. And he told me, he's like, he just talks about his findings. Like, I love that phrase. Like, he's like, we're all just scientists here. And, you know, I don't know it all. But I will share my findings over the years. And I find that this or that works, you know. But so yeah. Looking at those three things, right? Getting hurt is just all about safety, safety, safety. I preach safety. I preach safety. I say that word so much. I don't care how sick people get of it, especially in the Master Cycle Advanced class. It's like your partner's safety is more important than your own. And if everybody has that culture going about it, then you know. So far, no injuries. So far, you know, people have been a little gassed and winded and fatigued, but no soreness or, but you know, injuries. So that's good. So just drive safety and, you know, don't let people spar until they're ready. Don't let people spar until they've at least cycled through the basics program a couple times. Safety. Number two, you said, getting embarrassed. We kind of covered that. And then, what was the other thing? Getting embarrassed
being
and
wrong.
Being wrong. Okay. Being wrong. We covered that, but getting embarrassed.
You know,
part of it is just,
I feel like the embarrassment.
Let's humanize it.
I feel like the embarrassment is might be the biggest one of the three, because man, does that turn people off? You know, you talk about culture. I think if somebody comes through your door and they're embarrassed, something's pointed out to them that embarrasses them. You know, they might be embarrassed because of their physicality or something that you can't control. But if you as an instructor or if you as a teammate embarrass them on the mat, I think that could be more devastating than an injury or being wrong, because they're just going to be so turned off to you, so turned off to jiu-jitsu. They're going to walk out that door and, you know, guaranteed they're not coming back.
Plus, they're going to share the experience with everybody else.
Yeah, man. Again, you want to just think about that word, like validate their existence. You know, the fact that they're a beginner, right? I mean, everything is good. I mean, listen, if someone does the move 60% right, good job. Nice. I give them a rub their shoulder. Like, great job, man. Awesome. You know, and just make people feel like they belong. Make people feel like excited. I mean, I still think about this, you know, guy in his late 50s that everything is smiling, because it's just, you know, positive. And then we joke a little bit, and he's a fan of UFC. So, you know, I can drop a little UFC reference. You know, you'll see this in the UFC, you guys do it like this, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, here just for safety, let's make sure that we, you know, like I was showing rear naked choke today, and I could tell, you know, right away, he was, you know, tucking his chin as I was, you know, just demonstrating the rear naked choke. And I said, you know, here's the thing. I validated it. I said, listen, from a defensive perspective, he's doing the right thing right now. He's tucking his chin. This is usually, if I was showing the defense, I would say, do this. Just for the drill, let me just have the chin. There you go. Okay, perfect. And, you know, we just put the thing across. So again, like whatever they're doing, validate it. Say it's the right, like I'm sure it's right. Like he's defending his chin. That's the right thing to do. You know, it's not even the rear naked choke defense day. It's just to say, like, I wasn't going to choke through his jaw. You know, I'm not going to, like, not communicate with him. Like, say, hey, put your jaw. Let me get your jaw. No. We just pointed out that he's doing the right thing.
So you talked briefly, you just mentioned nobody got injured. Nobody is injured. You know, everything is running smooth. Do you think injuries are 100% avoidable in jiu-jitsu?
I mean, to what extent of injury? I think catastrophic injury is. You know, I think an injury that puts you out several months is, you know, I think if you're on the path to black belt, you know, you're going to get nicked up, you're going to get bruised, you know, you're going to get a little touched, you know, twinged here or there. I mean, I haven't had any catastrophic injuries. I haven't had any breaks. I haven't had anything happen in my gym. I did have like a disc issue in my back that took me out a couple months that it actually happened off the mat. So it wasn't like a jujitsu event that happened. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a way to answer that, right? Like we can avoid the jumping guards where, you know, guys blow their knees out. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You can avoid, you know, someone fracturing their arm. Right, you can avoid a complete dismemberment of their neck. I don't know these things.
Yeah. Is that chiropractic term?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, listen. I mean, things that might take you out a couple of days here or there. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, even animals say it's like this journey. I mean, on your way to the journey, it's there's gonna be, yeah, you're gonna get touched up a bit, but you know, you can kind of get used to that little things, and you know, I can help out with that, but. Yeah, I don't want to see someone coming in with like just a complete destruction of their arm, you know.
I think is important to remember, this is a physical sport. It's a contact sport, right? We even though I think safety is the most important part, and I agree that should be preached every single class. Your partner's safety is more important than your own. Really look out for your partner. Without your partner, you can't train. That's how I look at it. I mean, we had some examples of it last year during COVID when, you know, we couldn't train. Training was limited. How did we all feel? It sucked. So let's take care of our partners. But at the same time, you know, there is a sense of manipulation of our bodies. We're putting ourselves in these uncomfortable positions, these compromised positions. Bruises and tweaks and little wear and tear here, it's going to happen. It's just part of what we do. Am I off on that?
I think it's big to start to emphasize that more in I like the way combatives is structured in the sense that, man, it's like, it's damn near impossible to get hurt in this basics program. If you're teaching it the right way and you're communicating the right way and people are not sparring super early, at least super early. I mean, some people like start a 3-stripe white belt. I think that's reasonable, you know, or 2-stripe at least. I mean, just not day one. You know, I mean, there's no reason why as someone is learning the fundamentals of the techniques and it's just drilling, they should even be twinged. Touched up. I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, maybe somebody's knee will land on the, you know, their thigh or something. Okay, it's a little, but yeah. I mean, I think once you get to the blue belt level, then it's going to start to be a little bit more real than, you know, couple stripe blue, especially getting into purple. Then it's like, okay, you're in this journey a little bit. And if someone cares about really getting good, I tell guys in the blue belts that I sign up with me, I'm like, listen, guys, if you eventually like really want to up it, I would encourage you, you know, come with me to an open mat. I'm not saying just go to an open mat. I'll say, come with me to an open mat. And then, you know, I can point to different guys, go with this guy, go with that guy. Let me point you to, you know, Gio Martinez, go with Gio and see how he feels. You know what I'm saying? Like, because Gio's school is about 40 minutes south of me. So he's got the best Sunday open mats, I think, in SoCal, one I've seen. So,
it gets crowded. Over
you know,
gets
I mean, crowded. Oh yeah, for sure. It's a doghouse there, man. But no, I mean, it's all nice people, but that's a place that, you know, it's safe, but you know, you're going to get yours, man. You're going to get some tough roles there. So
Gary's on his way.
I wish.
Listen, I know you have hard cut off and we're going to have to start wrapping this up soon. You got stuff going on.
If people don't show up for advanced class, then you know, I'll keep talking.
But listen, let's kind of, you know, bridge this to the end. Gary is going to hit you with the 5 questions that we have. We changed it a little bit, but
yeah, well, I still don't honestly, want to
know. Yeah. Honestly, I changed them all.
You changed?
Yeah. If you listen to episode 15, if you want to hear his answers.
Still don't wash my belt.
I wasn't. You can't see it because it's written
that
so small.
That hasn't changed for me. I just want to let you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right, so what are the questions?
What was it like teaching for the first time at your own gym?
Just, what was it like?
Emotional?
Yeah, it was. My mind was going a million miles an hour. Just try to do everything right. And we had one intro class guy and then a couple blue belts. And it was like, just make a good impression, set the tone early. That's how it was for me. It was a little frightening. I'll tell you what. Frightening, like this is real, but exciting, frightening and exciting. And all these emotions you might get on going on a roller coaster, like an actual one, like Raging Bull or something. It's like, you know, I might lose my life here, but at the same time, this is like the greatest thing in the world.
That's great.
It's what life is made of. You know what I'm saying? It's like one of those like real, like, oh man, I mean, roller coaster is the best analogy, man, because just every second I'll either feel great or bad, but the class went great. I mean, like I said, the on the mat stuff has been amazing so far.
That's fantastic. What was it, or what was the biggest obstacle in opening your own place?
The mats.
That damn pillar.
The damn pillar, man. No, okay. So there was a couple obstacles. Actually, I was going to talk about this. One of them, and I'm going to write a Jiu-Jitsu Times piece on this, so it'll kind of go more in depth about it, but first was just spending 2 months finding a place and talking to all these realtors who didn't do a damn thing for me. Like, they're just taking me to like all these showings and stuff that like these places just were, you know, overpriced or just completely not what I was looking for or whatever. And, you know, I go and I'm looking at them like, you know, and I looked at like 20 places, just not quite right. And then I just do a Google search and I find a listing in the city that I want. And I'm like, oh, you know, it looks pretty good. Hit up the realtor. He's like, yeah, we have a lockbox. You just go lockbox, go check it out. I checked out this place. It's great. And we just, you know, negotiated for a little bit, but you know what, that's what it was. It's just, I found it on my own, a Google search. And you'd be surprised how much you could do on your own. Or if you talk to a good friend or, you know, use your network rather than just saying, hey, I have to go find, like, again, I found a lawyer to write up waivers that I didn't need. You know what I'm saying? And ultimately I could have just done, you know, I could probably just ask Tom, hey, could I, you know, take a look at your waivers? And I'm sure he would have been like, hey, you know, I'll show you over what we do. I could have talked to, you know, another chiropractor, say, hey, do you have like HIPAA compliance forms, you know, informed consent forms that, you know, something I just like shoot to my patients.
Listen, maybe you just have extra cash laying around and you want to just hire people. I mean,
I wanted to do it right, quote unquote, but then, right, I mean, it's just, it's excessive sometimes, you know.
It can be. I think right so is different.
Either realtors, anything. I mean, it just they don't get paid until you actually rent a space. But then I realized, like, I didn't need that. I didn't need, you know, these things. So cost, you know, just cost effectiveness, having a hard budget. These are the things I'm learning, you know, opening my own school and the logistics of the mats and stuff. Yeah, that's a whole story, man.
But I think you touch on something really, really important. Whether you're opening your own business or your own academy, anytime you go through a new experience, there's a learning curve. And I think often that is underestimated, period. We think, I even know from my side, running academy, opening an academy is one thing, but putting a new program in, that's an experience. Doing construction, as stupid as it is, doing construction, it was like one of the biggest learning curves for me. The things that I thought was common sense, they are not common sense. Here's another one. Starting a podcast with Gary. The things that you think would go according to plan.
Yeah. Yep.
You guys seem to have it, you know, pretty dialed in now. I mean, it seems pretty good, but like,
I'd put up with a lot of shit and I know when to keep my mouth shut.
But yeah, man, you mentioned construction. I mean, construction's like, I found one contractor that he built the whole place out and then he was a subcontractor for a mat company. And then I wasn't going to use his mats. I was going to use Gracie mats. So he kind of was like, okay, you do your own thing for mats. And then it's like, he wouldn't do the measurements for me. I mean, he did like some quick measurements for me for the mats. And then that I sent those into the guy and then they're like, oh, this is like several inches off. I'm like, okay, I got to remeasure it, you know? And then again, construction, then we're dealing with other tenants who are complaining about the noise for the construction. And I'm like, oh my God. And then we had to come in on a weekend and get all this stuff done, you know, just like little things, constant curveballs, man, that,
you asked for this. Remember, don't forget this. You asked for this. This is you doing this all willingly on your own. Nobody's forcing you.
And I am learning a lot. And certainly if I ever go about it again, like if I'm going to help someone else open their own academy or go somewhere else and open one, like I know a lot of things to sort of avoid and navigate now.
All right.
So that's very much. Yeah, I can keep going. I don't know if anyone showed up yet.
Yeah.
But we don't want, let's keep moving on because we don't want anybody to wait for you. All right. What has been the hardest thing for you to learn or master in quotes, in jiu-jitsu, movements, techniques. What's been your biggest issue?
Inverting, man. I don't know. I mean, that's a pretty straight away answer, man. I suck at inversions. I have the ugliest barambolo you would ever see, but somehow it works.
That's all you need, right?
The hardest jiu-jitsu movement for me, it's like that's still it, because I mean, I had a back surgery, so I try to invert and I do it, and it's like, I watched Donaher doing his video and he's like a dilapidated old man and somehow he's still able to invert like beautifully, and I'm doing everything fundamentally. I'm just like, you know what, man? I don't know if I'm.
Have you filmed
hardest jiu-jitsu movement?
Have you filmed it and watched yourself? Because maybe it's all in your head.
I refuse, man.
Do it. Do it. Because I'll, you know, we used to film judo throws here. And I'd be like, God, this looks awful. All right. I'm thinking it's awful. And then I see it and I'm like, it's not that bad.
I think the biggest, that's certainly the biggest movement. But when you talk about the philosophy, I mean, I was very much like grindy for the first couple stripes of my white belt. And this wasn't very hard to do, but I mean, I got way into like Kieron's whole keep it playful, you know, mindset. And that was, I think, the best thing that happened for me for my jiu-jitsu was just sort of like, don't treat this like too serious. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you do, then it's just like, it's going to be unpleasant. And then you're going to have such high expectations for yourself. And it's just going to be constant disappointments and, you know, just unrealistic many times. And I remember being a white belt and training with like high level purple belts, man. I'm saying like guys who are in our gym who are competing in all these IBJJFs and very good, even took a private from, you know, one of them. And just like these guys were just spanking me. I mean, just demolishing me, smoking me. And I'm like, hey, what do I got to do to beat them? It's not realistic, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? So catering your expectations, tapering your expectations rather. But I think that whole keep it playful stuff was a big way to get me to chill out a little bit and, you know, start to roll much more enjoyably and start to say, hey, you know, you can move just for the sake of moving. Even if you lose position, you tried something out. That's great. Versus hold on to your grips. Hold on. No, don't let them cross the line. That's, you know, now it's like, I feel that served me so much more, is that mentality of, hey, you know, just allow something to happen for the sake of it happening so we can explore a new position.
I love it.
Mentally that was a big thing in white belt, physically inversions.
All right. This is from Carlos, one of the listeners, and he wants to know, how do you deal with major injuries?
Major injuries? Well, I can only speak from experience. I mean, the one major injury I had was a 14 millimeter disc herniation when I was a purple belt. I'll tell you this much. At that point, I mean, I was bedridden. I couldn't even like get out of the couch, and it happened right at the beginning of Christmas break a few years ago. I had just gotten my first strap in my purple belt. And then like a couple days later, just threw out my back. The number one way I dealt with it was just keep showing up to the academy. I had already paid for a Helsen Gracie seminar. So I went to Helsen seminar, but I was sitting on the sideline. It just an agony, but like I was there and, still, you know, picked up a couple tips from him, you know, a couple things on side control, little ways he put his body position, still use it. And, just realize that the progress doesn't have to stop just because you're not training. That's the way like I dealt with a major injury, is just, you know, my jujitsu, physical jujitsu is going to take a halt for a little bit, but I came back better. You know, I started sparring a couple months later after I got a surgery, just, you know, it was kind of got that done pretty quick. Just that disc, discectomy. They took a little bit of the disc issue out, disc tissue out. And, like I said, I mean, it was just being at the academy every day saying that, you know, just because I can't train right now doesn't mean it's not jujitsu time. You know, I was going to be at the academy 6 to 8 PM today, so I'm going to be at the academy. Or if I just didn't go to the academy, I'm going to watch some jujitsu. You know, I'm going to throw on, I mean, there's so much content out there these days that, you know, just, I mean, if you sign up at Thomas School, I mean, you have the whole, you know, you're constantly recording stuff. You can even watch me on there. I mean, I have, you know, whole seminar taped for you guys like that. You can learn my stuff. I mean, you can learn Eddie Bravo stuff. Like that's stuff that I was teaching, you know?
Yeah, that's a great seminar.
Learning never has to stop. And that's the way to deal with a major injury. If you care enough about, you know, getting, and I'll speak from experience here. If you care about getting to black belt, that's what it takes. And yeah, I'm
we had Dedeko recently, and he talked about that, you know, keeping the schedule continuously the same. So if you showed up Monday, Wednesday, Friday at the academy, you're hurt, you cannot, whatever the case is, still show up. It doesn't matter. Show up.
It's jiu-jitsu time. It's in the schedule. 6 to 8 is my jiu-jitsu each week, Monday through Wednesday, whatever it is. That's the time I'm going to do it.
Yep.
In whatever capacity I can do it, even if it's just mental, even if it's just emotional, I'm just going to go and hang out with the people at the academy and just talk to them a little bit, watch some jiu-jitsu, but getting a couple good conversations. And it's my social club. Right? Alec, and I'm quoting Adam here, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual stimulation, right? Mm-hmm. Physical stimulation is like, we all want to work out. Mental stimulation, we all want to learn techniques, want to be nerds. You know, emotional stimulation, these relationships we develop on and off the mat. And then spiritual stimulation, don't forget about this one, how I define it, giving you a reason to wake up in the morning, giving you a reason to get out of bed, giving you a goal in life. You know what I'm saying? Like giving you, you know, we can even take another level, like give you a reason to live for some people. You know, it's like, what are some people without jiu-jitsu? Take jiu-jitsu away from them and it's like, you strip them of so much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you took jiu-jitsu out of my life and it's like, what am I doing all this for? Why did I even go into chiropractic? You know, why am I even waking up each morning? No, it's because like this goal, I know there's no ceiling with jiu-jitsu. I know that it can take me around the world. I can meet more wonderful people. I mean, I'm not a celebrity hound. I'm not trying to meet celebrities, but I'm like, you know, I'd rather meet a jiu-jitsu celebrity or meet celebrities through jiu-jitsu than go on the red carpet and meet them. You know what I mean? Like, how cool would that be to like have trained with Bourdain?
Hey,
you know, I never got to train with him, but I know a bunch of people who did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, he did it the way he goes to restaurants. He's like, he went to every single hole in the wall gym, rolled with every single person he could. You know, and that's cool, man. That's cool. You know what I'm saying? Or like Jean-Jacques Machado is up there. Like Russell Peters goes to class a lot. And I met him. I was in two classes with him, you know, when I was a purple belt. Like, and I just met him. He was making fun of me being Persian and stuff. Like just giving me like weird eyes. Oh, Persian. Greatest thing, man. That was the greatest thing. And he's just making poop jokes in the freaking locker room. Like we're just dying, man. And then,
all right.
I just saw a picture.
You got to tell more. You cannot stop on this. What?
Oh, no. Okay. So Well, he said this joke a few times, like, and I think he said it publicly too once. Is like, guys, I think just the first time I trained with Jean-Jacques, like, he got neon belly and I actually shit myself a little bit.
Just a touch, right?
Actually, yeah. just a little something. And, you know, that was sort of my first impression of jiu-jitsu. And I figured, wow, I'm a natural. So he's just dropping. He's making people die in the locker room, man. Like, we were just dying. Like, how cool is that? Like, this pro comedian who, like, goes and, you know, yeah, you can go meet him at a meet and greet. You can go meet him at a restaurant and bug him at his table. Or, man, how cool would that be to just be in the locker room with him and just, like, you're not paying for a show. You're not doing whatever. You just kicking it. I mean, that for me is cooler, the coolest way of like meeting anybody who you would deem celebrity status or whatever. And you know, in jiu-jitsu, I have a few interactions like that priceless, man.
Yeah, that's great.
Nowhere else I would rather do it. Then it's like, here you're in a comfort zone. It's a comfort zone. You have something in common, you know, you have a connection, you have a bond.
Yeah, you're not just a fan. Just somebody on a pedestal. You've got like you said, a connection. You have something in common.
Though. I still haven't met Ed O'Neill, but like I really,
oh jeez, oh, come on, oh. I would love to. Yeah,
I would really love to meet him, and I'd go to him, and I'd be very polite and nice, and say, man, like really, that one Gracie breakdown you did with Henry and Huron, like for me, that was it. That was a great one. Yeah. I loved Al Bundy.
They say don't meet your heroes or your idols and stuff like that, and I would be a little worried because I have a perception of that guy being like the nicest, coolest fucking guy out there, and I would hate to have that be ruined. I'm sure it wouldn't be, but that's what I think of Ed O'Neill.
I heard a story from Gracie Academy, like one of the instructors there, he said, like, listen, like Ed O'Neill's the nicest guy. If you go meet him, Vince Vaughn's the same way. Like, he's the nicest guy in, you know, Gracie Academy. If you meet him, you'd be polite and, you know, go up to him and dude, I mean, they give guys the time of day. They're not, you know, jerks. Mm-hmm. But there was a time where one guy who didn't even train, he came and he saw Ed O'Neill, was like, oh man, I'm going to take a picture with you. You know, I got to get a picture with you, bro, man. I'm a big fan. And he's just making a little bit of a scene. Like, And then Ed O'Neill's in the sheepish sort of smile, like he's a humble guy, just, you know, just polite. He's being polite, you know, whatever. And then this instructor's telling me the story. He's like standing right there. And then the guy just keeps going, man. He keeps going. So I'm like, yeah, I want to say. And then Ed O'Neill just like whispers, like, would you just take the fucking picture already, man? Come on. You know? Like you could tell it's like, dude, he's in the academy. It's a nice place. Like if you approach him in a nice way, sort of quiet, man, you know, I really appreciate your work. Sort of. Yeah. I don't think these guys would be jerks, you know, but yeah. If you come in like paparazzi TMZ in an environment that they're trying to get away from that.
Yeah.
I can
probably oftentimes Matt is their getaway place. That's where they don't want to be chased. They want to be in their own environment. They want to do their own thing.
Yeah, there's that guy. Have you ever heard of that guy, Action Bronson?
No. Yeah. He's a rapper and a chef. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I didn't even know who he was, man. I was at a Gracie Academy like a month or so ago, and Heron was there early, and he was like, oh, I'm about to give private, whatever. And I was on my laptop doing some admin stuff. And then Bronson and like some other guy came in. I had no idea who they were. And we're just chatting a bit, blah, blah, blah. And this guy was talking about, I just went and lifted with Orlando Sanchez. And I'm like, oh, Orlando Sanchez, I trained with him like last week, this and that. And a little, you know, connection, some chat. That was it, whatever. And then, you know, they did the private lesson. Heron was like right there. Heron was like, yeah, Armando, you could like hang out here. You know, you're just on your laptop. You're fine. And then he saw Bronson like doing whole private with Heron. He's sweating. He's like, oh, he loves it. Then like afterwards, when they leave, like an hour later, some in class, Heron's like, hey, you know who that was? Like, I don't know. He says his name is Bronson, right? He's like, that's Action Bronson or something. Didn't know who he was. Turns out he's like 2 million followers or something.
Yeah, he's a big deal.
And then like, then he I took a picture of him, Heron, and another guy. I was the one who took the picture. And then Bronson posted that. And then like all these people, like all my a lot of my friends were like posting like, whoa, like something. And then I told one of my buddies, my good friend, who's a black belt in Charlotte, he actually like commented on the picture. I'm like, dude, I took that picture. Like, I didn't know, but no, you never know who you'll meet, man. I mean,
what you're saying is that you were cool for a moment by association.
Yeah. For a minute. For a minute.
That's all that matters. You got your 15 minutes. All right. Let's go back to Russell Peters a little bit and that poop talk. So this came up earlier with somebody who was here at the Academy, and he was asking me how I deal with this, but how do you let somebody know that they need to wash their gear?
Their gear? Yeah. Well,
By the way, this is a good point where you can exit and not answer this question.
I think this is an important question. No,
I look at how Adam used to do when I was a white belt, cause I was a smelly guy, you know? So no, it's like, I think just the most tactful way to do it. I mean, you could, there's different approaches. You can go to the person very like, you know, just direct. I mean, I think Kendra would kind of do that and just say, hey, listen, man, you know, got a couple complaints, you know, guys complaining about, you know, washing your gear. Just make sure you go home and wash it. I can give you some tips on how to wash it, blah, blah, blah. Appear very helpful. Like don't ever like chastise someone for them, but just kind of offer help, offer a lending hand. Like I can give you some suggestions, you know, some white vinegar, this and that, you know, just make sure you wash it afterwards. You can do it that way. Or, you know, I've seen it done where it's like just line everybody up and just make a general reminder to people. Hey, guys, just make sure you wash your geese when you get home, everything. You know, that way you're not singling anybody out. I mean, both, I think, kind of work effectively. Certainly, and going back to the embarrassing part about people, like people don't want to be embarrassed, right? So if you do it in a way, is there a way? I mean, I'm not saying you can or can't. It's like, is there a way to do it where you do it in a way that they feel like you got their back? Right. Like, listen, man, hey, like, just want to make, because Henry's really good at that. He's like, he'll have direct talks with you. He'll have those hard talks with you and then do it in a way that, like, you kind of thank him for his time.
Yeah. You know, you basically like, told me I smell like shit. Thank you. Right.
Yeah. I smell like shit. But it's like, listen, I mean, like, you can offer suggestions or this and that. Like, you know, we can tell you what cleaners we use, you know, sort of thing. But, you know, just make sure to do this so, you know, no one's uncomfortable training with you, because we want you to have the most pleasant experience along with everybody else, you know. There's a way to do that, right? So, I mean, I've seen it done differently. I like to be a fan of just kind of remind the whole class at the end. I mean, if there's two people in class and there's one person with the smell of geese, kind of like, we're kind of looking at that one guy. So, but he got a class to 40 people. And then you've just kind of subtly suggested them. Uh-oh. No, no, no. It's all good. It's UPS. Yeah. Just the whole, you know, line them up.
Yeah. Tell them at the end of class. All right, Thomas, you have a
line them up. And just a reminder, friendly reminder, guys, make sure you wash your geese right after class, you know, just for everybody's enjoyment, pleasure, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Pleasant time.
I love it. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. All right. We'll work on that.
All right. Shall we wrap this up? When is your official grand opening?
Grand opening is October 17th. I got a lot of work to do before then. Hopefully they actually get some chairs in right now, this UPS guy.
How many people are you expecting?
Hope you can come out, Tom. I mean, like, we'll have a good time.
How many people are you expecting? Are you making this a big deal, or is it going to be kind of under a table for all your students?
No, for the students, no. I'm going to blast it out in Instagram and everything, or just, you know, my network for sure. I mean, I'd want anyone to come. Like, just do a 4-hour open mat, so it's like pretty open ended, so people could show up at 6 and keep rolling or whatever. You know, I'll do some rolls. I'll be there, meet, greet, whatever. Have some food, little hors d'oeuvres, and a DJ. I mean, it's enough to call it an official grand opening. Like, I'm not anticipating 200 people necessarily, you know, but hopefully, you know, get a little crowd going. I mean, I'd like to, you know, it's more just to officially say, hey, we're open. But this first month is really just, you know, I needed to swing these doors open and learn on the fly and say, okay, I got to get people in here. What's not working, what's working, you know? And the first week, I wouldn't say it was rough, but it was definitely like humbling. Just, you know, having one kid in the kids class, and I didn't fart, but he's like, you farted. like that was embarrassing, man. Like, I didn't. I just made like a little noise with my, like, yeah. You know, my, like, I don't know, squeaky on the mat or something, like, you know, something. And then the kid yelled, like, you farted. And then his mom cracked up. His mom was dying. And I'm like, damn it.
That's the best part about kids.
This is now how I won my first kid. Okay.
That's the best part about kids. They say as is. There's no filter whatsoever.
What am I going to do? Correct him and, like, put him down and all this? And, like, just say, you're wrong. You're wrong. But at the same time, I don't want to validate that either.
Yeah, right.
That's even though it's like you want to validate students, I'm like, maybe that's something I cannot validate.
All right, man. Listen, great catching up with you. October 17th, grand opening. You know, make sure you keep us posted on everything that's going on. And, you know, I think you're a good example of really following your dream, following your goals. I mean, going back 5-10 years ago when all this started with some of those seminars, and then you're going through all these different milestones, and look at you today.
Man, I'm a baby school owner, man. I like to have like many students one day that I can say, hey, look at this thing we built here. You guys saw, you knew me before it. You knew me at the very beginning, getting these like little gritty details and some stuff I haven't even talked about. But well, actually, we covered a decent amount as far as the academy goes. And I mean, chiropractic is still in its beginning things. I mean, it just, I'm trying to, at this point, it's survival, right? What is just to teach us, right? Survival. It's like, I know I need work on my social media or my SEO. I'm going to jump on the phone with a guy who's really good with that stuff right after this. I mean, I know I need help with admin. I know I need help with these things. And I think with jujitsu, what jujitsu teaches us is that we don't know it all, at least after blue belt. Again, you know, everything is a blue belt. You're an expert as a blue belt. I knew that. Like, I was like, no one can tell me anything as a blue belt. I got it figured out. I know how to play open guard. I know how to sweep. Dude, my mount escapes are sick. Now as a black belt, I'm like, okay, what do I not know? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, where are my weaknesses? Where are my strengths? I think that's the true strength of a black belt, is to know, you know, your strengths, know your weaknesses. How can I be beat? How can I beat others? So let me focus on my strengths and improve my weaknesses and admit where I need work, which I see these areas I need work, and I want to hide from it sometimes, but I'm like, there's no hiding from it, because if you hide from it, it's just going to linger. You know, and it's going to still be there. And like, if you don't figure out how to market yourself, then you're never going to know.
You never will.
It sounds like you're on the right path, man. Congratulations on everything.
All right.
I mean, I'm looking at Tom as like my, like a mentor of mine, man, for real. Like,
oh, stop. Like, I'd love to have,
I mean, I love how Roll. I remember when he just started Roll, and then yeah. He expanded, and then podcasts, and seeing the guests that blow me out of the water. I'm like, why would you want me as a guest? Like, you got freaking Travis Stevens and Horion and dang, like all these guys.
Well,
it's like, let's bring Armand back on like that.
Yeah, for sure. People will listen. They'll know why we brought you back. You're making Thomas blush. So why don't we...
I'm not saying a word. No, listen, thanks for the kind words. I really do appreciate it. I mean, good luck with your academy. Good luck with everything you're doing. I'm really excited to sit back and watch you grow as all of this, honestly, is just starting. So much ahead.
God willing, man.
Beautiful.
Let's wrap it up.
Cheers.
We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Peace.
Talk to you soon, brother.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.